Good morning. You are listening to the F-Files on CKUT 90.3 FM. It's just after 11:30 on this Wednesday morning. However, I'm recording this from my studio on a Sunday up in the Chabanel District. It's beautiful outside today, bright and sunny. Really hoping when this episode finds you, it will also be beautiful, bright, and sunny. Can't actually believe that we're coming into the first week of April 2021. Where have the last 4 months gone? Anyways, I'm really happy to be back with you on the airwaves, and I've got a really special episode for you today. This episode is coming to us from Olivia Dreisinger. Olivia is an independent disability scholar currently based in BC, and she's just finishing up the first year of her PhD. Congrats, Olivia. We've worked together a number of times, so if you like what you hear on the show today, do be sure to check out our other interviews. You can find them on our SoundCloud page, which is F-Files Radio. So this episode will trace the history of alt text and ask if alt text can be considered literature. Who created alt text? Why has the writing of alt text been sidelined to AI bots? Can artificial intelligence write alt text poetry? Join your exhausted host, Olivia Dreisinger, as she sneaks disability up the inaccessible front steps of the Ivory Tower and podcasts her way through grad school. Really excited to listen to this one. Again, you're tuned into the F-Files on CKUT 90.3 FM. Keep it locked for the next half hour, taking you through to 12 p.m. I've been your host, IRL Human, and you can find us here every week. Same time, same place. And if you're looking for a little bit more content, you can find us on almost all of the social media. F-Files Radio. Hope you have a beautiful rest of the day and you enjoy the show. Have a good one.
www.artforum.com. Chrome has new window. Artforum International. Google Chrome page. For visit link. https://www.artforum.com/link/image. Open search. Toggle menu. Button. List 13 items. Link. Art guide. Link. News. Link. Shows. Link. Image. Toggle submenu, blank, print, link, image. Toggle submenu, blank, columns, blank, video, blank, advertised, blank, book forum, blank, any, blank. Unified ideograph, unified ideograph, unified ideograph, unified ideograph, blank, subscribe, blank, back issues, blank, newsletters, last 2 items, blank, register, blank, sign in, last 4 items, follow US, link, image, social media link dot name, link, image. Social media link dot name, link, image. Social media link dot name, link. Contact us. Chrome has new window. You are currently on a link inside of web content. To caps lock on. Caps lock off.
Alt-Lit, or Alternative Literature, was a literary movement started in 2011 by like-minded authors on Tumblr and Twitter. The decentralized aspect of the movement's origins mirrors the central component of the movement itself, the self-publication, self-promotion, and dissemination of one's work via primarily the internet, featuring primarily internet communication. The movement quickly exploded with those in their late adolescence and early adulthood who shared a similar 21st century digital malaise, their lives inextricable from the constant presence of the internet. Armed with laptops and smartphones as their new writing devices, members of the alt-lit movement harnessed internet language. Bo Rice's novel Text, for instance, is a text message conversation between the author and a former long-distance lover named Matt G. Talon's now-controversial Richard Yates is heavily composed of Gmail chats between him and his then-underage partner, E.R. Kennedy. Megan Boyle's 700-page book, Live Blog, is, well, a live blog. Boyle, upon the book's launch, even live-streamed a 25-hour near-continuous reading of her book, live-streaming from a concert hall, a moving car, the side of the road, and finally, an apartment.
It's 9:07 p.m. FedEx was closed. Yoga done for the day. Did not write cover letter. On the way to get Adderall, it's from Dad's apartment. Smoking cigarette. Ran over a gray lump. Want to pay someone to read this and diagnose me. Nagging prescience that there's something I can't see, an obvious problem outsiders can see clearly that knowing would help change. Feeling that thing I'd feel on Sundays, knowing school is tomorrow and I haven't done my homework. Disappointed in me.
More recent novels, what I would call post-internet literature, like Olivia Sujik's Sympathy, dubbed the first great Instagram novel, look at the dark side of digital technology and its effects on on- and offline intimacy. On post-internet poetry, the poet Kenneth Goldsmith announced that, quote, after the web, we will never write the same way again. Alt-lit and post-internet writers have been applauded for their novel use of email, chat logs, SMS, tweets, screenshots, emoticons, Facebook posts, and other forms of social media or functions of the internet. Following from the tenets of the now-dead alt-lit movement, and here I make a rather tenuous semantic leap, I want to consider another kind of internet language, alt-text. Why has alt-text never really been taken up as a genre of writing? With this question, I set out to find more on the history of alt text. Who created alt text? Why has the writing of alt text been sidelined to AI bots? Can artificial intelligence write alt text poetry? Can alt text be, well, literature? Welcome back to my academic podcast. I brought back this sound to signal footnoted material in the podcast transcript. This episode will trace the history of alt text and ask if alt text can be considered literature. As a quick disclaimer, I am a sighted disabled person. I do not have a visual or cognitive disability that makes interacting with a digital screen difficult. I haven't had much experience using screen readers either. I do, however, write alt text to the best of my abilities whenever posting or circulating images online. Alternative text, or alt text, is a written description of an image or visual material. Put another way, alt text is a non-visual text alternative to digital images. Screen readers speak these alternative descriptions aloud, or output the information to a refreshable braille system. Blind people, people with low vision, or people with certain cognitive disabilities may use screen reader technology while navigating digital spaces. To put things simply, alt text allows people access to digital images. While alt text is an important access issue, it is very often overlooked. Literally. Alt text, for instance, is typically invisible to internet users who may visually experience the internet. Walled off behind lines of code, alt text is really only noticeable to web developers or screen readers. Why is alt text so hidden, or perhaps to use a more charged term, segregated in online spaces? Maybe it's time we go looking for alt text. As I started my search for alt text, I found its history eluded me. I had so many questions. Who came up with alt text? A quick internet search had left me scratching my head. Who could I give credit to? What year did alt text come into existence? Was this something that predated the web? I decided to consult my online disability community. Soon, I received this comment from a more seasoned internet user in one of my disability forums.
Way, way back, you used alt text when you were on a slow connection and would have images off by default. Internet at 2400 BPS. I remember it took like 8 minutes to get my first image off the net. For some reason, it was a static interlaced GIF, no JPEG at the time, of a Coke can with condensation on it. But yeah, accessibility wasn't inherently a consideration with the alt tag. But given the relatively simple design of web pages, it was much, much easier to use a screen reader back then, such as they were at the time, with cost barriers, etc. The accessibility difficulties really began when the web started turning into bloated, overly complicated shit. And it only seems to be getting worse.
Their comment was followed up by a date, 1995. I was 4 in 1995 and was not using my household's dial-up internet at the time. So I would have missed out on this whole Coke can with condensation GIF and alt text altogether. I was instead bopping around to some sing-along CD-ROM fed into the family computer, enjoying my pre-reader years. With this tip, I looked deeper, now knowing what to type into my all-powerful search engine. In 1995, HTML 2.0 introduced the alt attribute. The alt attribute was described as text to use in place of the referenced image resource, for example, due to processing constraints or user preference. Instead of loading the image, for instance, a browser could display the alt text like Coke can with condensation. As my forum friend has already noted, alt text was not necessarily born out of accessibility, but maybe more so as an alternative to slow internet connection. Although one of course could argue that internet connection speed is also an access issue. Text-based web browsers like Linux were also in more widespread use compared to today. A few years after the alt attribute was introduced, the World Wide Web Consortium, or the W3C, published the first version of the Web Content Accessibility Guideline, an initiative that outlines how to make the web more accessible to people with disabilities. Web accessibility seemed to be gaining traction. I did some more digging, wanting to know who the important figures in web access were. After several dead ends, I downloaded a paper by Kyoko Asakawa. Asakawa is a blind computer scientist, known for developing early screen reader and self-talking browser technology. She developed the IBM Homepage Reader, a plugin for the Netscape browser, and, more recently, an AI suitcase that will help blind people navigate public spaces. In the paper, aptly titled, What's the Web Like If You Can't See It?, Asakawa discusses her personal experiences as a blind internet user in the early days of the web. In 1994, she was able to access the web for the first time using a DOS screen reader. Then, in 1997, Asakawa notes she successfully bought a cake from an online shopping site, using a prototype of her homepage reader to navigate the purchase. So, what is the web like if you can't see it? Well, for Asakawa, the web may be filled with inappropriate alt text or noisy, useless information.
Space or GIF image, click here, shadow space, horizontal line.
While she presents this information in a humorous way, one can see how screen reader users would easily tire of not being able to understand the visual material. Writing in 2005, Asakawa explains, quote, "Currently, user-side technology has become quite accessible and usable. However, the content itself is becoming inaccessible using various types of visual techniques. The use of images is rapidly increasing. The internet has become even more visual since then. Has it become more inaccessible?" In 2016, Facebook introduced Automatic Alt Text, or AAT. Using object recognition technology, Facebook and its subsidiary apps would now generate an automatic description of each photo posted to its platforms. In the name of accessibility, Facebook handed things over to the AI. Let's see what the AI came up with.
Maybe an image of one person and smiling. No photo description available. Lamp, pillow, sofa, maybe an image of a living room.
Instagram, acquired by Facebook in 2012, produced similar results.
Maybe an image of one or more people. Outerwear, headscarf, maybe an image of a parrot and budgie. Image, grass, people, water.
I then sifted through all 89 posts uploaded to my Instagram page. Most had automatic alt text. Maybe less than 10 did not. The automatic alt text appeared most accurate when reading images with text in it, often translating it letter for letter. It seemed to sometimes struggle, however, with images of dogs, but could identify things like bedroom, outdoors, jeans, curtain. But it didn't seem capable of stringing these things into descriptive sentences. In other words, the images still failed to mean. To be clear, I don't mind AI writing alt text, but it doesn't seem like they've been taught how to write alt text.
Darling Muppet, you are my seductive charm. My anxious longing breathlessly sighs for your wistful fellow feeling. You are my loving ambition. My avid affection pines for your keen desire. You are my craving tenderness. Yours curiously, M.U.C.
This is a love letter written by the Manchester University computer, henceforth M.U.C., in 1952. M.U.C.'s teacher was Christopher Strachey, a computer scientist and designer of the love letters algorithm. Strachey was also the nephew of literary figure Lytton Strachey, a member of the Bloomsbury Group, think Virginia Woolf or E.M. Forster, which seems like relevant information here. The computer was provided with a sentence structure with fillable blanks, and a simple list of nouns and verb phrases were compiled for the computer to select from. The sentence looks something like this. Salutation 1, salutation 2, you are my adjective noun, my adjective noun adverb verb, your adjective noun, yours adverb. Strachey later expanded the program to include a table of themes and moods for MUC to learn. But no machine-printed poems appeared to have been produced, or at least archived. 3 years earlier, Alan Turing had humorously declared in an interview for The Times that, quote, "A sonnet written by a machine will be better appreciated by another machine." Turing was responding to his colleague, the neuroscientist Jeffrey Jefferson, who, a few days prior, had made the following dismissive comment on the intelligence and creative potential of AI. Quote, "Not until a machine can write a sonnet or compose a concerto because of thoughts or emotions felt, and not by the chance fall of symbols, could we agree that machine equals brain. That is, not only write it, but know that it had written it." Humans, Jefferson appeared to be saying, were the superior literature machines. Well, I for one feel like MUC really captured that silly feeling we may get when in love. Dennis Duncan points out that the Love Letters program was, quote, "an early experiment in natural language processing and an ironic spoof of the Love Letters conventionality as a form. The joke being that this is a genre of writing whose underlying structure might be comprehensively analyzed." Stretchy played with the love letter genre, much the same way I am trying to play with alt text as a genre of writing. As Stretchy and later others have proved, we can teach AI to be poetic. Can automatic alt text become literary? What we need, perhaps, is a more robust algorithm, not one merely compliant with current accessibility guidelines. Maybe Facebook's AI can learn a thing or two from Stretchy's love letters. Is this podcast about whether or not alt text can be considered literature, or whether or not AI can write literature? I'm not sure, but they seem connected. The disability community writes alt-text love letters to one another all of the time.
Slide 1. A small slug on an oxygen tank, leaning down towards the dial. A blurry background of lush grass on a sunny day. Slide 2. A small bright yellow buttercup, sitting atop an oxygen tank, several petals fallen off, better showing the stamen, in the center.
This is Access is Love, as disability activist Mia Mingus has so beautifully put it. This kind of love cares about access, about disability. Naming and seeing in certain ways is also a kind of love. But outside the work of the disability community, a lot of alt text and automatic alt text seems fairly clinical. Descriptions of images read as perfunctory, constrained by narrow and prescriptive rules. How can we meet access requirements with love? I am not new to this question. Alt Text is Poetry, a project started by artists Shannon Finnegan and Bojana Kokliat, quote, reframes alt text as a type of poetry and provides opportunities to talk about it and practice writing it. Finnegan and Kokliat, I would argue, have created a sort of access love project. After all, poetry is commonly referred to as the language of love. Finnegan and Kokliat teach three main principles for alt text poetry: attention to language, word economy, and experimental spirit. On attention to language, they write, quote, simply by writing alt text with thought and care, we shift the process. What words are we using? What are their connotations? What is the tone of our writing? The ways in which we're doing the writing? What is the voice? Who the reader hears? How do these align with or contrast the tone and perspective of the image? Like AI, most people I talk to have not really been taught how to write alt text. I decided to do my own writing experiment. I selected two photographs from my camera roll, posted them to my social media with a general call for alt text volunteers, and waited. I then provided minimal instructions to the volunteers, wanting to see how they would intuitively approach the exercise, in a sentence cap of 3 to 4 sentences. Here's what they came up with for the first image.
A white mug sits on a wooden platform, possibly a table or flooring. The mug is filled with a dark brown liquid, with what appears to be a butterfly or moth suspended in the substance. The insect floats near the side, somewhere around 30 degrees.
Centered in the frame of the photo is an industrially manufactured white mug containing black coffee. In this mug, there is a small moth saturated. Its semi-transparent body floats off-center. The hues found in the small moth are echoed directly in the color range of the rest of the frame. Brown, black, cream. Found at the edge of the mug is a subtle crema ring and steam, signaling that this coffee is freshly brewed and poured.
Maybe I describe the image like this, knowing the circumstances behind the photograph, my boyfriend having taken it. A white ceramic coffee cup sits on a wood table. A moth has tragically drowned in the coffee, floating on the surface of the liquid. The second image was, admittedly, a little more visually complicated to describe.
In a moving vehicle, a white woman sits on the black leather interior seat. Wearing a puff vest and tracksuit, both the color black, with white piping, they hold their cell phone in their hand while looking up at the camera lens. Perched beside the individual, there is a knockoff designer bag that is faux leather with brown graphic detailing. On their face is a neutral expression, lips straight, head tilted, and eyebrows relaxed.
This is a photograph I took of a friend, so again, I had a bit more knowledge of the image. But when I sat down to write my own alt text, I found myself overwhelmed with the task. I saw too many details and found my lack of distance to it challenging. What was important to include? What details should I just leave out? After a few failed drafts, I fielded this one over to my unsuspecting boyfriend.
A young woman sits in the leftmost leather bench-style back seats of a van or SUV. Her hair is blonde and tied up in the back, and a pair of dark sunglasses rests on the top of her head. She's wearing a black Adidas tracksuit with a black puffy synthetic vest over top. She's looking at the camera with an unfocused but friendly and relaxed look. Her right hand rests on her lap, holding a phone with her thumb poised to touch the screen. A Louis Vuitton bag rests on the middle seat to her right.
I don't think people who use screen readers necessarily want to listen to an alt-text novel, nor do I think they want to have a literal translation of a picture is worth a thousand words. People have varying opinions about how alt-text should be written. And, of course, access needs should always be considered over the impulse to turn or repurpose access into art, or at least by those who these access needs may not apply. So, what can we learn from alt text? I turn to one last quote, an excerpt from Jay Dolmage's book, Academic Ableism, before I offer some sort of hurried ending to this episode. Quote, "The images in this book will be fully and carefully described and given alt text in their digital format. Too often, books and articles skip adding in these additional descriptions, making the images, charts, graphs, and figures that may be central to their argument inaccessible to many members of their audience. In fact, in this book, sometimes all I will offer is a thick visual description of an image as a means of highlighting the rhetorical and translational value of doing this describing." What is the value of doing this describing, as Dolmage puts it? At the most basic and most important level, describing provides access to images. But writing and
what made you drop out?
Well, a lot of people think it was a 400 acid trip they took, you know.
Uh-huh, but what was it really, Bob?
One day I played CKUT in 90.3.
Then what happened?
I saw God.
You I've saw done God. That. Well, that sounds like true enlightenment to me,
yeah,
Bob.
Yeah, it was grim.
And on the seventh day, the Lord said,
let there be a CKUT.
The alert level in your region or a neighboring region is red. To curb the spread of COVID-19, gatherings with family and friends in private homes and yards are prohibited. Travel between regions should be avoided. It is forbidden to leave your home between 9:30 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about other measures in place to fight COVID-19. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Montreal singer-songwriter Adelaya is on the rise. Listen to her critically acclaimed debut album, What We Say in Private, and follow-up EP, Woman Here. Now available on all platforms. Follow her to be the first to hear when new music drops. Learn more at adalea.com. Funded by Factor.